welcome to Nerdette Recaps Game of Thrones with Peter Sagal. I am Greta Johnson here with Trisha Bobita and Peter Sagal. Hey, guys.
Hey.
Good morning.
I am in mourning, speaking of mourning.
Are you?
Yes, for Roose Bolton. I am, in fact, forming an international committee to force Melisandre to resurrect Roose Bolton.
Oh, good one. Dude, did you think that was going to happen? Did that blow your mind?
Well, in retrospect...
Yeah, right?
Roose was pushing it a bit with his insane son, Ramsay, saying, oh, yes, well, I've got this other son now who's a tiny, helpless infant. So clearly, you're in trouble. We don't need you anymore.
Oh, my.
Don't you be saying that to a psychopath. Yeah.
Okay, so we will get to that eventually, right? But this week on the podcast, just to clarify, we are recapping Season 6, Episode 2. What was this one called, Trisha?
Home.
Home.
Home. Several people very definitively say they either want to go home.
Yes.
Or they miss home. There's a lot of homesickness.
There is. For no good reason. There's no place that anybody wants to go that is worth going to. Am I right? I mean, like...
I mean, their own childhoods and innocence.
You mean, like, in life?
Yeah.
Or in Westeros?
Well, and no, I'm not making this yet into a larger philosophical argument about the pointlessness of all human endeavor. We'll get to that by the end of the season. I'm just talking about Westeros, like when Theon says, I'm going home. And then we cut back.
Oh, yeah, man. Yeah.
Iron Islands where
why would anyone
even
want to be there?
Bleaker, wetter, and more murderous than perhaps any place else.
I called it Wet Dorne in my notes.
That's really good, Trisha. Okay, so we actually are going to start with Bran and the flashbacks.
Beyond the wall.
But yeah, we do want to leave what happened actually at the wall till the end. So we'll start with Beyond the Wall. What happened here?
So we have the return of Bran, who's gone through puberty,
so
basically.
Yeah, it's like, oh my God. He's a senior citizen discount. It's like, Bran, you're going for the early bird special. It's like, what happened?
Yeah, that was shocking.
It was crazy. All of a sudden, he's shaving. It's like, how did this happen?
And I think it's pretty cool that the TV writers have come up with a device that's going to let us, especially the non-book readers of the TV show watchers, get any and all missing backstory that may be existing in the world of the TV show, because we now have flashbacks in the mind of Bran.
If you were tired and didn't get up to turn off the TV right away, you would have seen a little featurette about this episode.
So you're saying you watched the featurette because you were tired?
It was like I could get up and turn off the TV and go to bed, or I could just sit here and stare at
control,
the glowing
Peter?
Screen.
Yeah, man, you don't
it
always
was
watch
like
the
3 feet away.
You always watch the featurette.
I do always watch the featurettes, but I'm saying that I just sort of let it roll. And uh-huh. Mr. Benioff, one of the two showrunners, explained that they never wanted to do flashbacks because it's lame. Flashbacks are lame.
Sure.
To have a character look into the... Imagine Ned Stark from the first season looking up into the air and stroking his... And then all of a sudden... But as he pointed out, now, because you're having these visions, Bran can, and as the New York Times recapper pointed out, in a kind of Christmas Carol-like way, can go revisit the past with his spiritual guide, Max von Sydow, who, can I say... I mean, that's cool. I'm totally for that. This is a great notion to do a backstory. We're coming up in the Tower of Joy, book readers. Yay. Don't they look ridiculous in that underground tree root set?
Yeah.
Like, there's Max von Sydow sitting in, like, a really elaborate, like craftsman-type chair made of antlers, it looks like. It's like, dude, no.
Isn't it all the roots of the tree?
Apparently, that's what it is supposed to be, but it just looks ridiculous.
Trisha, you called it a tree cave in your notes. I called it the Raven Cave.
Good. We all have our own names for this.
Yeah. And it's also weird that even though they've established that this individual is the individual represented by Bran's vision of the three-eyed raven, do they have to keep calling him the three-eyed raven when he neither has three eyes nor is a raven? Can't they just call him like Max or Bob? Or now that we've found him, I mean, is that what he says? You know, it's like when they have dinner, presumably they have to eat. They've been there for a while. It's like, so... and Bran, would you like some more? Three-Eyed Raven, would you like seconds? I don't think it doesn't really flow in casual conversation is what I'm saying.
I thought it was really fun to see the younger versions of all of these characters. God, are they all dead?
Yeah, all the characters you saw were dead. That was in the flashback. The three principal characters were the youngest one was Ned Stark, who grows up to be Sean Bean and then dies. And then there's his older brother, Benjen Stark, who appeared in the first episode or two of season one and then has disappeared ago.
So, yeah, he's not necessarily
but they're not
totally
all dead.
Dead, right?
Not all
Hodor
dead.
Is not dead.
Hodor is not dead. Or Willis?
That's what I was leading
you
up
mean?
To is Hodor.
What you talking about, Willis, with all those words?
What you talking about, Hodor? Or the internet has made that already a thing, right?
I just made it up, really? You're telling me that I'm behind? Anyway, and that was the girl who wrote in In a Jane Austen-like fashion.
You missed Peter's wrist movements again with the writing.
English saddle always. Uh-huh. That was Lyanna Stark. Now, Lyanna Stark was, among many other things, the cause of Robert's rebellion because, and can someone play like nerdy background music as I explain this? Robert's rebellion began when the crown prince, the son of Aerys, the Mad King, either kidnapped, absconded with,
eloped or with,
possibly eloped with Lyanna Stark, who was Ned Stark's older sister, who was betrothed to Robert Baratheon, and everybody got really mad, and there was a rebellion, and people died, and the crown prince was killed by Robert Baratheon with a hammer to the chest, and then something like 18 years later, the events of Game of Thrones began. So Lyanna Stark plays a very key role, and as of now, we don't know exactly what happened to her, except she died at the Tower of Joy.
I love knowing that Hodor, Willis, and Lyanna were friends when they were children. I think that that's going to be really interesting for Bran to be able to maybe recover some of Hodor's memories as a way to, for us, the audience, uncover what happened in the past. It was pretty sweet to see that Bran was really excited about that whole thing, right?
Yeah.
That he loves Hodor very much and is now probably on a quest to figure out if he can sort of unlock Willis from Hodor, which I think in the world of the show would be kind of a strange, even in a world where people come back from the dead and there's magic and all those kinds of things, to have Hodor be Hodor for this long and then have him like mid-season be like, so the thing is, Bran, would be a little disconcerting.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. But we'll see. We'll see where that goes.
Can I say something?
Is that his voice?
Hodor?
That's the voice of Hodor.
Yeah, it's Hodor. Listen, so yes, that'll be fun. We get to do a lot of fun backstory to the world of Game of Thrones with this sort of Christmas Carol-like device. And Max von Sydow, who's 87, I was reading.
Yeah. So, Tricia, you just said something that does remind me of a question that I think we both have, which is whether or not Bran is actually in the memories of Hodor or if he just is sort of able to access, like, past things.
Right. Does he need a direct conduit to a memory, or can he just go anywhere in the past?
I believe the notion here is that Bran is being trained to use his inherent warg-like abilities to go into other people's minds to expand his spiritual slash magical powers by the three-eyed raven guy to go back in the past and have visions of things that are beyond the memory of the people around him. That is, I believe, the implication. But I'm just pulling that out of my ass.
Well, I Googled it last night.
Did you now?
And here's the thing.
Yes.
So according to the internet.
Yes, which is never wrong.
The Weirwood Tree itself is sharing sort of its memories with those who can tap into it. So there's a scene, actually, if you go back to Osha and Bran sitting at the tree near Winterfell, their sort of their Weirwood Tree there. You hear her say that the reason that Rob will be in trouble when he goes south is they cut down all the weirwood trees so the gods can't help the northerners
right.
when they get to the
south. That strange little creature with the funny, like, Star Trek Next Generation Vulcan makeup. That's how I saw
her name is Leif, and she is a child of the forest.
She is the child of the forest. And that
Trisha
was the.
Trisha is a goddess.
You are. And apparently those people, that race of beings, were sort of mystical beings who used to live there before the men showed up, the first men, and the Andals that we hear about when we mention the title of the king. And they use these weirwood trees as a kind of an intelligence network. They could listen through the trees.
It's kind of like Avatar, right? Don't the trees kind
don't
of do
ever
that
say that again. It is nothing like Avatar. Avatar is bad. This is good.
Fair enough. I'm not a big enough fan of Avatar to defend it.
No one is actually a fan of Avatar. Everybody on the planet went and saw that movie and nobody liked it. We just went because we had to.
Okay, let's go to town. It's time.
Time to go to town.
Time to go to town. Meanwhile, in town. Whenever you say that, I don't know if you guys are aware of this, but and I don't know if they still do it, but in the old days, the Hollywood Reporter and Variety, the trades, used to have these little news bits at the end of their columns, and it would talk about who was in town and who had left town. This dates from the day when getting out to L.A. was a big deal, two-week train
trip.
So it'd be like, you know.
Yeah, see?
So no, it'd be like, today, arriving on the Century Limited, it's Van Dyke Parks, or whoever it was. And so when I think about that, whenever you used to call in town, I imagine, like, you know, the trade paper in King's Landing. You know.
Perfect.
And they're saying, today, you know, Littlefinger has arrived in town on the 4 o'clock wheelhouse.
Good.
Or whatever
that's
it may
actually
be.
Quite fitting. Right. I like it a lot.
Okay.
That sounds good. So we have this drunk guy who says a lot of scintillating things about
this
Cersei.
This is so great.
Was that your favorite, Peter?
It was my favorite, but for a reason you guys may not know. Lena Headey, when she was interviewed on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, we talked about her walk of shame, and I brought up that guy. Do you remember
that guy?
Who's Thames Absence sort of...
Flashes himself?
Well, flashes is not an active enough verb for what he does. He kind of waves himself. And I talked to Lena Headey about this guy, and she told me a story, which I assume is true, of like meeting him at craft services. And she says, "Oh, what do you do here in the set?" He says, "I'm here to flash my winky at you."
Oh, boy.
And I love the fact that that guy then got a scene out of it.
Because I
was thinking, the joke was, you know, my standard joke, which is what, in quit show business? Like, mm-hmm. Have you guys heard? I'm on Game of Thrones. Watch quickly. It's in the Walk of Shame. No, he got a whole scene out of it. And I was like, good for you. Formerly naked ways, actor.
And of all the ways to die, getting, you know, destroyed by the reanimated mountain is pretty cool.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, man. I thought the levels of effortless murder that occurred in this episode were pretty great. Like that moment when the giant just like...
One-one
plucks that dude out and like throws him against the wall and that's it.
We're jumping ahead, but I found out this from a fine recap in the New York Times Monday morning. That 1-1, the giant.
The guy who plays 1-1?
No.
I have a bit
and you have a bit.
Yep.
My bit is this, that 1-1 was named by George R. R. Martin in the books for Phil Sims, the New York Giants quarterback, whose uniform number was 11, 1-1.
Oh,
and we all knew that George R. R. Martin is a huge New York football fan. In fact,
we did all know that.
No, there's a moment in, I think it's the fifth book, where a very minor off screen, I guess you'd say, character who's named after Bill Belichick gets killed because he doesn't like Bill Belichick. But I did not know that 1-1 the Giant is named for Phil Simms' uniform number. What do you know about 1-1 the Giant?
So this actually might be a different giant. But apparently he's played by this guy named Neil Fingleton, who is 7'7".
No.
And they just put this body cast on him.
To make him even bigger.
And then made him look even bigger.
That's fabulous.
Isn't that insane?
Yeah. Can I say that there's an amazing array of body types?
Yeah, that's true.
There's actors of all shapes. And like, how do you cast the guy who plays young Hodor? We're looking for a 20-year-old actor who's 6'5" and...
Shops in Sears Husky Department.
Exactly. And like,
that's what it used to be called.
Yeah,
can you imagine...
Good word for Hodor.
Have you ever been around a casting session where they're casting, say, beautiful young women for, you know, swimsuit girl number 3, say. And so the hallway is lined with beautiful young women. Or they're casting nerdy guy who's the computer programmer roommate. And the hallway outside the casting session is filled with nerdy little guys.
Little Peter Sichels.
Yes, exactly. No, in fact, that was a specific reference to the very brief period of time when I was an actor in Hollywood, and I showed up at that casting session. Can you imagine what the casting session looked like for young Hodor?
Awesome.
Can you imagine the strain on the floorboards as all those incredibly enormous young men were standing there?
Well, apparently this dude who played the giant, I'm not sure if it's 1-1 again, just to clarify, but apparently he went in and tried out for the mountain. And they were like, you're not quite right for the mountain, but like, we're going to keep you in our pocket.
We're going to keep you in our back pocket.
We might come up with something for you. Yeah.
Amazing.
Anyway, where were we? We got all lost.
We're in town.
We're in King's Landing. Let's just zoom through the Lannisters being a little whiny.
A little whiny.
Yeah, man.
So we have Tommen whining to his dad uncle, Jaime. We have
Dad Uncle.
I Dunkle.
Can
Dunkle.
We call him Dunkle Jamie?
Yeah, yeah. Dunkle Jamie works.
It's better than Ud. Uncle
like
Dad. I have a couple things about that. First of all, I'm glad that what bothered me bothered Tommen, which is why didn't you do anything about the fact that the church had just kidnapped and imprisoned both your beautiful wife and your beloved mother?
Yeah.
He bothered him too. Also, does Tommen always have to wear his crown?
Uh-huh. Also, what is it doing to his head?
Yes. It's not a good look. I mean, I don't know from royalty, but I thought you just put on the crown when you're being an official person. You're sitting in your throne. Do you have to wear it all day?
Your sister's funeral, you would be sort of in your formal dress, though, right?
Yeah. Even though there was nobody else there, which was weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The faith militant, maybe it's kind of like where you're like, we don't celebrate birthdays. I don't know. It feels like they suck the ritual.
The faith militant is like a mean spinster aunt. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Like, we have no birthdays in this.
Yeah. There used to be like
aggressive Jehovah's Witnesses.
And then we have, you know, Cersei, who has been relegated to the Red Keep. She's not even allowed to go to the funeral.
Yeah.
And then Tommen comes and apologizes. And then there's this really uncharacteristic hug.
Yeah, that hug was creepy.
I just find anyone hugging on Game of Thrones unsettling.
Well, that's because of what happens the next hug we see, which is Roose and Ramsay.
It is rare to get
an embrace that doesn't involve either sexual activity or a murder.
It's true.
Welcome to Westeros.
They're usually hugs with benefits to someone.
or detriments.
We do need to talk about how remarkable that scene was between Jaime and the High Sparrow, though, right?
I mean, yeah.
It was. I thought it was really interesting just to see the fact that, like, here's Jaime, and he's ready to call bullshit on this guy, right? He's like,
what about my sins? I broke a sacred oath and stabbed my king in the back. I killed my own cousin. When the gods judged my brother guilty, I helped them escape that justice. What atonement do I deserve?
What? I don't care about, you know, yeah. Like this, you're not special. Yeah. Like I can take you. And then like the tides shift so quickly in favor of the High Sparrow.
I know. It's because the High Sparrow has guys. And as he says,
go on then. I deserve it. We all do. We are weak, vain creatures. We live only by the mother's mercy.
So,
but if they donate $27 each, then we can give the crown a run
the
for
analogy,
its money.
The analogy continues to the whole Bernie Sanders thing.
Because I think,
it's like,
yeah.
And then that sort of like, then we overthrow an empire. It's like, you know, yes, I seem to be this harmless old man, but I am actually angling to be in charge of this whole thing. That's Bernie Sanders.
I forget whose recaps it is that does this. It might be Entertainment Weekly. They actually call the character Bernie Sparrow, which I like a lot. Just in all of the recaps, that's what they call him.
So to what extent is the end game in King's Landing, like the High Sparrow doesn't actually want to be king, right? Like, isn't he winning right now in charge of Tommen, essentially?
Yeah,
and then, you know, Cersei's locked up and Jaime's scared. Like, that's the ideal, isn't it?
He's a real, I mean, I love the way Jonathan Pryce is playing him. I love the way that he's written because he comes across as, in a Bernie-like way, as he's this very kind old man. When we see him, he's always barefoot. And when we first met him, he was feeding the poor.
Well, he's kind of disheveled.
He's very disheveled. And he doesn't look or act at all like all the other players in Westeros who are trying to be in charge. But it turns out he actually wants to be in charge. That it's not for nothing that when he decided to go after sinners in King's Landing, instead of, say, guys who are waving their winky at people, he went for the two most powerful women who have leverage over the most powerful man. He knows what he's doing is what I'm saying.
Right. I'm just curious if he actually like literally wants to be the guy in charge or if he's happy being behind the scenes pulling all the strings.
Oh, I think he wants to be in charge.
You think he wants to sit on the Iron Throne?
Sitting on the Iron Throne is uncomfortable. He's wearing just a cotton shift. I think he wants to be in charge. I mean, that last line of his, you know, we are so small and weak and yet together we can overthrow an empire.
Yeah.
I think that was an indication of motivation. I think he's saying what he wants.
So you think he's not going to drop out of the Democratic primary?
I don't think so. I think that if this were a musical at that moment, he would have broken out into what we call the I Want song.
Yes, he would have.
I want to run a theocracy. I want to have the church in charge of everything.
That didn't rhyme. I was hoping those two lines you just said would
rhyme. It would be something along the lines like, I'm not throwing away my... I can't come up with a pun that rhymes with shot in time. I'm sorry.
Man,
I know. I'm not throwing away my shift. I'm just like my country. I'm old, skinny, and hungry, and I'm not throwing away my shift. All right.
That's not bad.
That was the Hamilton reference for today.
Yes, thank you. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Check that box. All right, quickly, to Marine, where we're having a senior staff meeting.
And they all seem so unhappy.
Well, yeah, things aren't going well. Their queen is still gone. Their ships are burnt. Let's see, what else in the status update? Oh, Slaver's Bay is back to the slavers, except in Marine.
Yes.
So, like, basically everything they tried to do has been undone.
Right.
And the dragons aren't eating.
No, that's terrible.
The hungry
dragons. The hungry dragons. Although, is the byplay between Varys and Tyrion getting a little overtly comical?
Yeah.
Yeah, I make eunuch jokes. He makes dwarf jokes. I don't make dwarf jokes.
You think them.
Yeah, 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 yeah. No. Varys, who's on first? I mean, it's almost on that level now.
However, I did like that the opening quote from Tyrion in Meereen was that thing about, like, if I didn't have a cock, I would drink all the time.
Yes.
I did find that humorous. I wrote it down in my notes as being humorous.
So let it be written in Greta's notes. So let it be done.
And so then
I thought the cock jokes. I mean, that's remember the last time he was like, "Well, you don't have a cock."
Yeah, totally. Yeah, that
getting
one
a little
more aggressive.
I mean, pointing out that someone does not have a cock is not necessarily making a joke about it.
Yeah,
that's true. You're indicating it.
Yeah.
You're not providing a humorous spin. I'm a professional comedian.
And with Grey Worm there, it's like a tough room for that joke.
Like, no offense. That was actually funnier than anything else that happened.
So Tyrion, we learn from his interaction with the dragons as he monologues to try to calm them.
Yes.
I'm friends with your mother.
I'm a friend of your mother.
Which was hilarious.
Yes, like, I'm here to
help. Dragons are going to like, oh, in that case, don't eat him. Don't eat him.
Don't eat the help.
He's a friend of mom's.
But dragons could be smarter than humans. So
well, that's
not
what
necessarily
he says.
Unreasonable.
Yeah, I think so.
So now what happens to the dragons is they get to go free and eat whatever they want, right? Because they were not eating because they were sad and captured. And Tyrion warns everyone that they would become cat-sized in, you know, a matter of years.
Waste away, yeah.
Yeah. So Tyrion now has the dragon sort of on his side. Like, they owe him a solid, which is good. They do. I think that's good for
that's
Tyrion.
That's good phrasing, Trisha. I like it. I think it is good for Tyrion. I mean, we wonder, are they going to eat babies again, right? That's what they did last time.
They did a couple of eating of babies.
But now that they're bigger, babies are sort of like an amuse-bouche for them.
Yes.
So I think they will just stick to, like, livestock and stuff. So maybe we're okay with that.
Yeah. Unless they need a snack,
too. Right? Because the ram was what Drogon had eaten, that Ser's lover boy had
Ser's
found.
Lover boy. Good. Thank you. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens with that one. And it's worth noting, we actually saw no Danny in this episode. Jorah Greyscale.
Yes.
Or Ser's lover
boy. Is that what we're calling him now?
No.
Are you calling him by his disability? Jorah Greyscale. That is so insensitive of you.
Does it count as a disability?
I think so. I guess he gets aboard the planes first.
It's an infectious disease, at the least.
You think they'll put him on the airplane first with that?
I think so. I think he can do pre-boarding because he has grayscale.
I don't think they should let someone with grayscale on an airplane. Does that make me?
Yeah,
it's too infectious.
What about grayscale rights? I can't believe how insensitive you are.
That's like saying someone who's got like the most viral contagious thing should be put in the plane. No. You don't get to go on the plane
I think you are really insensitive
viral,
to the grayscale
though?
Community.
Or is it bacterial?
I mean, but if... All right. It's neither because it's magical. Moving on to Braavos. Okay. We have places to be, things to discuss. Not much happens here except that finally the Faceless Man says that she can come back inside because she resists the temptation of saying her name for shelter, food, or even her eyes back. And he says, okay, well then come with me. You're ready. Yeah. You're not a beggar anymore.
I think she knew. I think she knew she had to keep saying was, I don't know, I'm nobody, I'm nobody, and who's going to take her back? And again, this is I honestly think they should be meaner to Arya. I've said this before. Like, what does Arya need to do? They should have then cut to her sitting in the rain, blind, and then he shows up to show that, like, she said, yep, I gave up, and now I am suffering and suffering and suffering.
It did feel quick.
Yeah.
It was too quick a turn.
If I say no, he'll actually feed me. Yeah. It did feel a little ridiculous.
All right, Greta, Peter, let's go to Winterfell.
I wish one of the sponsors was the International Grayscale Awareness Society.
we'll get them for next week.
We'll reach out to them.
With grayscale to try to spread understanding.
Do they have a hotline?
Yeah, exactly.
Do you have grayscale?
If you're struggling with grayscale, I don't have grayscale. I have sympathy for people with grayscale. They are our brothers and friends.
Is it psoriasis, but worse?
It is. It's very bad.
Okay.
It's itchy. Makes you crazy. Anyway, moving on.
Winterfell.
Yes.
Winterfell. Oh, my gosh.
We have been tiptoeing around it a little, mentioning it, that we have a bit of murder.
Yeah. Bit of murder. I am so sad. Somebody wrote in and said, you should never said it was your favorite character.
Yeah.
Yeah. Michael McLatten, I think his name is. And I'm all right to see him go because, first of all, the character deserved it. After all, as I said, that taunting of Ramsay. Well, we won't need you anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've got this little helpless baby. Yeah, shut up, Bruce. Secondly, I made the mistake. This is always a mistake when you fall in love with a character, is like watch an interview with the actor. Because it turns out Michael McLatten, if that's how you pronounce his name, is a very good actor. But he's just a guy who's very nice. And I saw an interview where he was being interviewed by a German interviewer, which is always hilarious.
Did you see it in German?
No, I didn't. It was just a thick German accent. So tell me about Roos Bolton. That's not a German accent. And it turns out he's just this very nice actor. And what was really interesting is we know now he was talking about this upcoming season, and he knew what he could not tell her, which is that, you know, all this conversation about Roos Bolton and all about...
Wait, it was a lady German who
was talking
about
German,
that?
Yes. Was pointless because he knew what she didn't know was that he basically had an episode and a half before his quick exit. But I was still very sorry to see him go because he was such a fun character.
This is where in my notes I had written hug, and I was like, okay, maybe Cersei and Tommen hug. And then when this hug happened between Roose and Ramsay, I was like, hug, all caps, exclamation point, question mark, no way. No. And then it made much more sense because it was just for proximity, for stabbing.
Could you please actually read this verbatim because it's just so good?
Oh, so these are my notes. It said, hug. Really?
Next bullet point.
Next bullet point. Okay, hug was to facilitate stabbing. That makes more sense.
I think that's really good.
My notes from...
The thing that really bums me out about Roose being dead is that he was the only one who could even remotely actually keep Ramsay in check.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Ramsay was still really horribly behaved, but like at least there was something.
At least there was somebody telling him, don't be crazy, don't be dumb.
Yeah.
And in fact, the last thing that Roose said to him in the last episode is, if you behave like a wild dog, people will treat you that way.
Yep.
And that's a good point. Ramsay will probably now do some crazy, reckless things that will get him in trouble, or so we all hope.
Yeah, I think go for it, Ramsay. Go ahead, go on up to the wall. I can't decide who I want to kill Ramsay now. I think 1-1 is just really good at killing people at the wall now, so maybe him. Or Ghost, just for like some sort of poetic, like getting eaten by a wolf when you use dogs to kill.
There has been some
foreshadowing,
since he likes to feed people to dogs.
So maybe Ghost kills him, or actually, really though, we want Sansa to be able to do it herself.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be cool.
How much did you guys shudder when Lady Frey, or when Lady Bolton, I guess, handed over her
baby? Oh, God, I was just about to say, out of all the moments in now into 6 seasons, that may have been the most discomforting moment.
Yeah.
And all I could do was think, like, please don't do this. You get a shot. It's an actual live baby, at least in one of the shots. Please, please, I know it's fake. I know you won't actually kill any babies.
Totally.
Just like Sean Bean is well, alive and well in the real world. We understand this. This is fiction. But please don't make me watch that. Please don't make me watch that.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. They get eaten off screen. Much better. Oh, gosh. Thank you, guys. I really appreciate that.
And only a couple things happen in the woods near Winterfell. So we have Sansa and Brienne doing a little catch-up chat. So
yeah, they talk about Arya.
They talk about where Arya may be. They talk about what happened at Winterfell. And then Theon basically realizes that Sansa's in good hands, that if he goes to the wall, Jon will probably kill him because he's
That's why
done
he
a
left,
thing,
right? I was trying to figure out.
Yeah, there's nowhere safe for him, actually. Sansa can be safe somewhere. Theon is not safe where Sansa is safe. So he asks to take a horse and go home, which I guess horse gets you part of the way to the Iron Islands, but he's going to need some other transportation
like
at some point.
It's going to take a long time, but I guess that's fine. He can be tangential.
There's something about the passage of time which is somewhat confusing. Mm-hmm. For example, there's no time passed since the end of season 5 and the beginning of season 6. You ended with Jon being stabbed. You started with Jon lying there in a pool of blood.
Right.
How much time has passed up with the Three-Eyed Crow beyond the wall? Because Bran has grown 3 feet.
Well, we hadn't seen Bran in all of season 5, right?
Yeah.
So at least a year.
You think? Was the events of season 6 an entire year?
I don't know if it was really an entire broadcast year.
Well, I know that, but is it like a year in Game of Thrones time? Because technically
it could
be as little as 9 hours or less, because so many things in the show happen presumably simultaneously. The scene happening in Meereen is happening while the scene in Winterfell is happening.
Yeah,
right?
But think about all the stuff that happened over season 5. There was a lot of pretty boring traveling.
There was the long journey that Varys and Tyrion had to take in the, what is it, a house?
Yes.
And Arya had to get to Braavos.
The wheelhouse, what are they called?
I guess my point is not so much that no time has passed, but I don't know how much time has passed.
Yeah, it is very confusing.
That is fair.
And now we're in the Iron Islands, which I forgot I was supposed to care about.
Can I just say one thing quick about Sansa?
Yeah.
Please.
Is it really horrible that I kind of want her and Podrick to get together?
No, sounds nice.
Doesn't that sound nice?
Podrick,
my thought,
we discussed that Podrick is a firm hold on second best person in the Westeros.
Well, and Theon leaving is like, all right, this opens up this possibility now. I just wanted to
She's been through some stuff, so I don't know if she's really ready to put herself out there. She may be looking for more of a casual thing.
So you're sort of
some
thinking like Sansa and Podrick, sort of like Gina Davis and Brad Pitt in Thelma and Louise kind of thing, like. They have a thing.
Is this when I admit that I haven't seen Thelma and Louise?
This is when you do that.
Yeah.
Go ahead and do that.
No, I haven't
seen. Well, the listeners know what I mean. It's sort of a casual encounter that sort of cheers her up a lot. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds nice. Brad Pitt, I'm sure it was lovely. Okay, Iron Islands, you forgot you were supposed to care. I still don't really care.
Well, here's why I may care. I was like, Dorne is dumb, right? Last week we all talked about how I think that there are sort of a clear set of people who are heading towards the end of whatever this journey is.
Yeah.
And things like Dorne and things like the Iron Islands don't feel like they're going to play a major role because they've never played a major role so far. And then I remembered that the White Walkers seem to have a problem with water. So maybe you would want the fighters by sea on your side in whatever eventual battle is coming, because they can handle things by sea that the land families can't.
I don't think there's anybody on the Iron Islands, with the possible exception of, what do they call her, Yara?
Yara.
Yeah.
who would be you would want on your side in any kind of dispute. can we talk about the Iron Islands? This is one of the kingdoms of Westeros, ancient seat of power for the Greyjoys. We do not so is their house slogan, their house words. And for all that they've accomplished in terms of reaving rape. I mean, they're basically the Vikings of Westeros.
I respect that, but
they've done all that.
So.
They don't have a better way to get from one castle to the other except an incredibly rickety ladder between one tower and the other.
Come on.
Have we no masons?
Trisha, I fully support your desire to call this Wet Dorne.
That was really great.
Brilliant.
They look real. It looks like a really bleak and unpleasant place.
Yeah, it does.
And all I could think of when they were standing in the water for Balon Greyjoy's wet funeral is like, they must be cold.
Wet funeral.
Yeah.
So, Peter, remind me, this storyline did happen in the books.
Hugely
right?
important. Yeah. In fact, there's a lot. I think it's book. You
the
guys
Kingsmoot, was that in book four? Even?
I can't remember if it was book four or book five.
Okay.
But
Kingsmoot is a funny word.
Kingsmoot mm-hmm. is a funny word, and it is maybe an echo of the Entmoot that we remember from Lord of the Rings.
Mm.
But there is a, I don't remember, but yeah, it is a huge thing. In the books, Greyjoy Balon, the father, died by falling off that bridge months and months ago, earlier on, back when Melisandre was burning leeches. And killing
right.
kings. And she took credit
Gendry's
for it.
Gendry's blood.
Yeah, and she took credit for it. Like, you see? He's dead. That was me. I did that.
Mm.
But now it has happened now thanks to his crazy brother. I think it's Euron Greyjoy,
yep.
I think we're told. And so, yes, there is a lot of plot in the books. One of the books that I presume we are now going to engage in.
Okay.
A lot of plot.
A lot of plot.
Can I continue calling him the Dread Pirate Roberts as I have been in my head for
Which
the last...
Which one?
The pirate brother who has just returned and is like, I am the drowned guy.
I am the drowned. You may call him the Dread Pirate Roberts.
Okay,
you
thanks.
May call him that.
It is so.
There will be no survivors.
Another parallel between Dorne and Wet Dorne is possible Lady Uprising, right?
Right. If
yeah.
Yara wins the Kingsmoot or if she does something else to acquire power, we may now have more queens than kings in this.
That would be exciting.
I mean, the slogan of the show is all men must die. So with every woman that gains power, it seems like a pretty good bet that maybe she'll keep it for a little while.
Speaking of women and perhaps their new role
Let's
in
get
this
the patriarchy
TV show.
Jingle ready.
No,
just
I'm just
in
saying,
case.
Am I right or are we now two whole episodes into Game of Thrones without a single pair of boobies?
Those old boobs, dude.
Oh.
Remember?
No, you're right. You're absolutely
the
right.
The Red Woman, we see them
boots.
Pre and post
pre and
transformation.
Post. You're right. I apologize. I withdraw the comment. But maybe, a number of people are pointing this out online is that maybe as women are finally coming into their own in a way that they never have on this show before, other
they
than
are.
Being
They're
scheming and
power.
Sexual. Yes. Which I guess is good.
That's where the jingle goes.
Everybody quiet, because Peter Sagal's got another goddamn opinion.
Right
no,
there.
I mean, because what's her name? Ilaria Sand down in Dorne. She's unpleasant.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Cersei
no,
remains
right.
unpleasant. These are
True.
Not pleasant women,
Fair.
But they are
no,
women.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Trisha, this point about keeping score, we kind of just mentioned it, but I still think it's kind of interesting.
Oh, right. So, Peter, you mentioned that the Red Woman put the blood of, is it Gendry or Gendry? Gendry?
Gendry?
Really?
Gendry.
I thought it was a soft G.
I have problems with the Gs.
Gendry is off.
rowing.
Somebody sent us a gif of Gendry rowing.
He's been rowing for three seasons now.
he's rowing toward that motel where that guy is still sitting from the end of Breaking Bad.
But he is the bastard son of Robert Baratheon.
Yes.
And so the Red Woman uses his blood to cast a spell on the usurper king. So we have Robb Stark dead.
Yes.
We have Greyjoy dead. Balon Greyjoy dead now. And the third is Joffrey, also dead now.
Yes.
So her magic seems to be working pretty well in a couple of instances in this episode.
Yes.
So, which brings us to the wall.
Yeah,
it
and
does.
Speaking of her magic
Finally.
Working really well.
Yeah. Here we are. So he's back. We knew he was coming back.
We did.
And I honestly thought it was rather clever of the writers that instead to make it a big surprise, just to have Davos walk into her room and say, would you resurrect him, please?
Yeah.
He's we were all hoping you could do that.
Earnestly asking for a resurrection.
Because
yeah,
we were,
I loved how obvious that was. I thought for some reason I figured it would be a little more understated.
Yes. But imagine if they had tried it with like Melisandre saying, wait a minute, I have magical powers and I can resurrect him. And everybody in the room would be like, what? That's crazy. You can't do that. That's what a crazy, amazing, surprising idea. And all the millions of people watching it would have said, we saw it coming. We saw it coming for a year.
Totally.
So it made more sense to have Davos be thinking just as we were that Melisandre has done these things. As he points out, he's the guy who saw her do these crazy things with us. So basically Davos and us, the viewers, have the best insight into Melisandre's actual power. So it makes sense for him to say, hey, could you do that?
Well, and the fact that she was in so much doubt about her own power, too, meant that she needed someone to kind of help egg her on and say, no, I'm pretty sure you can actually do this.
Right. I loved the line from Davos of, I'm not a devout man. And he basically says, drowned God, old God, new God, I don't care. I'm asking the woman who I've seen perform miracles, help my friend.
Right. That was very nice.
You know, it's a really wonderful moment where he's like, yeah, no, I'm not, I don't care what the theology behind this is. Can you do it?
Right.
Make it happen.
I also really loved the moment when Melisandre is doing the healing thing and, you know, there's like this long pause and nothing happens and dude just like storms out angrily that John hasn't been.
Yeah.
I just thought it was really cool.
It was interesting to me that even though they've used special effects to indicate magic before, most spectacularly the Shadow Baby, that they did nothing. There was no, the lights didn't even flicker. Mm-hmm. There was no like, rah, people looking around going, what's going on? they depicted this resurrection, this act of magic, which probably surpasses any magic we've seen so far, with nothing, with just like a woman mumbling.
In Valerian.
In Valerian, throwing hair, yuck, into a torch, doing nothing, doing stuff that we would imagine in this non-magical world would pass for a religious ritual, which we would not expect to have any real effect, such as resurrecting somebody.
People have been giving Jon Snow guff for having such pretty hair season after season, but it sure came in handy last night.
It did. Thank goodness. And so it was interesting to me that that's how this moment that everybody's been anticipating for all the reasons we've discussed, when it finally came, it was done with no special effects, no music, no nothing, just this woman mumbling. Everybody goes, oh, it didn't work.
Ghost is so happy.
Yeah.
That was sweet.
The ghost wakes up and he goes.
So what next? Is he still Jon Snow? Is he sort of a shell of Jon Snow? What is he now?
Well, this is, again, an artifact of the lack of Lady Stoneheart.
Yeah.
Because with Lady Stoneheart, who, as we've discussed ad nauseum, is the resurrected Lady Catelyn Stark, who is utterly transformed into kind of a monstrous zombie lady. We don't have a precedent for what it's like to be brought back except for Lord Barry, as we discussed,
right,
who I think should have his own breakfast cereal. It's Lord Barry Berries. And we don't know. He seemed fine. He's like, oh, man, I'm pretty wiped out having been resurrected 7 times. Maybe that's it. Maybe it's like, whoa, gosh, my knife wounds hurt. Oh, and that's it. Who knows?
Right, because he doesn't heal because Lord Barry Berries.
Yeah, he
has
walked
an
around
eye
with
patch.
His
you know, he doesn't sort of regenerate like the Doctor would in Doctor Who. He has to keep carrying all his own wounds with him.
I will reference something really obscure, which is, so how, really, Peter?
Yeah.
Is that something
I'm
you're going to
so
do?
I'm so surprised to hear you say
some
that.
Some years ago, right when the show was starting, John Hodgman, of all people, did a podcast interview with George R. R. Martin. And they talked about resurrecting characters, which George R. R. Martin does more in the books than we've seen in the TV show. And one of the things that Hodgman pointed out to George R. R. Martin is that you come back from the dead in Game of Thrones and it changes you. And George R. R. Martin said, yes, don't you think it should?
Yeah.
To the extent that, yeah, this is not like, oh, I was sick and I woke up. I was dead. And he was dead. He was dead to the point where I began to wonder when there was going to be a joke about the smell.
Right.
And,
yeah.
You know, in real life, as was mentioned by Cersei in the last episode, bad things happen to dead people in terms of their appearance.
Yeah.
And we were getting to the point where that sort of stuff should have started happening to John. He'd been there for a whole day. It's not that cold.
Yeah.
And yet, now he's back. So I hope there are some ramifications as opposed to just, hello!
I don't know. I guess the way I'm picturing it is that he's, especially having become a member of the Night's Watch, he already had sort of a level of disconnect.
Yeah.
From not only the Starks, but just sort of, I think, all of the things that were happening outside of Castle Black, right? And I imagine that that disconnection is going to be even more severe.
Like, see, but I think the opposite.
You think he's going to have more feels?
Because, well, he has, the next episode is called Oathbreaker, and his oath is until death. So he can't own any lands or can't be sort of a political figure once he's taken the Black.
He also can't have sex, and he's been doing that left and right.
But I think the idea is now that there's actually nothing to get in the way at all of him being king of the North, because his oath is broken by his death. And so now he could be
That's an interesting point.
I would like that more.
That is,
sure.
I think what you'd need
That's
at that point,
Tricia,
is you'd need Ser Beric Bernstein, Westeros lawyer. And he'd show up.
Does Sam
say,
come back as a lawyer, Meister?
No, he could. He'd come back as, let me explain. He'd say, Your Honor, let me explain why the oath is no longer valid. Of course he's Jewish. I'm sorry.
And he's being played by Kevin Pollak in your impression.
Exactly. He's played by Kevin Pollak. He's like, excuse me, my lord, I have some points here.
We're going to talk about some of your audience questions in just a minute. We'll be right back.
So we've heard from a lot of you with your questions and comments and notions about these last couple of episodes of Game of Thrones.
Yes.
One that I thought was pretty interesting was we got a couple of questions on Twitter about the shape of the bloodstain behind Jon Snow's head.
Yes.
Was it a crow? Was it a dragon? Some winged creature? Any opinions?
Or just blood?
Yeah, I was kind of like,
Snow?
I feel like it's just blood, but I guess I can't criticize anybody for overreading.
Absolute horse pucky. Absolutely.
Horse pucky. You think it was horse pucky?
I think it was. No, I think that it was. I think people said the guy who does a weekly podcast about a TV show. People have too much time on
okay.
their hands.
All right.
I think that's ridiculous.
Fair enough. Okay, let's take a listen to this voicemail.
Hi, my name is Roxy, and I just really have to say that where Melisandre was at, she was in John's old room, and you could tell because she looked at the chair where she first tried to have sex with him and he denied her. I think it really shows, like, her sadness and the idea that she was too late, like, she was wrong in everything. So I just wanted to clarify that. I love your guys' show. I listen to it every Monday, and I can't wait to hear the next show. Thanks. Bye.
That makes sense. That would be a nice thing for them to do, to give the nice lady the Lord Commander's suite.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think that's
although,
true.
Although it does raise the question of what time it was when she went to bed in the last episode, and why didn't anybody else go knock on her door?
Yeah.
In all this turmoil going on at Castle Black.
But kind of cool insight from Roxy the listener.
Thank you, Roxy the listener.
And you can call us too with insight or questions or whatever you like. 312-948-4687 is the number to call. So we also heard from a lovely human on Twitter. This is from Christine Adsel, who says, I think the Call Widows are going to be badass, free of the Dothraki patriarchy, like the women at the end of Fury Road.
That would be very cool.
Wouldn't that
cool.
be awesome?
If
that
anybody,
would be really exciting.
If anybody, now, these women are supposed to stay there. That's their gig,
yeah.
is they stay, and they're sort of the reigning crone priestesses of...
Crone priestesses.
You know, I believe that's what they're called. They're called crones in the book. And if anybody could rouse them to rebellion... It would be our Danny.
I believe so. Yeah.
We'll see
I think we're going to see that next week.
Yes.
Based on the next on Game of Thrones.
Yeah, there was this shot of her being marched into this enormous horse statue.
I don't watch those. I'm a purist.
You watch as little as possible.
You don't like the actual show.
I saw John Resurrect.
Why would you torment
done.
Yourself with coming attractions?
For the record, I would like to say that I actually really enjoyed this episode. I think what really works for me is to have exceptionally low expectations.
Yes.
And then every once in a while, I'm pleasantly surprised.
This works in almost every kind of human relationship, by the way.
All right. I like that prediction from Christina. If you have predictions, want to call in 312-948-4687 or tweet at us. We're at Nerdette Podcast. He's at Peter Sagal.
You can also find us at nerdettepodcast.com. The show is produced by us with help from our WBEZ cohort, especially Joe Dassault and Robert Anderson.
Thanks also to our interns, Maya Cole and Siebrid Mallard. Our executive producer is Joel Meyer.
I just had a great idea.
What?
When Game of Thrones ends, because it has to, a Roose Bolton prequel in the vein of Better Call Saul.
Yeah.
Like Better Call Roose. So we get back Michael McLaten, and he gets to be evil, but kind of classy.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I think, you know, TV show characters who have been fan favorites have gotten their own spinoffs before.
Why not?
That's why we have Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., because everybody loves Clark Gregg from
right.
the Avengers.
Exactly. You know, so, hey, it's Roose.
You'd rather have Roose than Ned? You think
yeah.
Ned's too
oh,
boring?
Yeah, Ned's boring. Although we are getting Ned back. Did
right.
you see that? We're getting a young Ned. In,
oh, is that
next
in the,
week's,
is
in
that
next
in
week's
the spoilers
Tower
that
of Joy?
Mm-hmm. That's the Tower of Joy. Every time I say Tower of Joy, you don't know what I'm talking about, but all the book readers nod grimly.
And those
grimly?
Who have spent
well,
a lot of
so.
Time on Wikipedia also know.
Yeah, man. The internet.
That's me.
The yep. internet tells us.
The internet
we
tells
know.
Us.
Our theme
knows.
Music is composed by Andrew Edwards of Blue Police Box Music.
You can listen to us wherever you're listening to us, because in fact you already are listening to us, but we would appreciate if you subscribed on iTunes or followed us on NPR One or Stitcher or whatever. Just search for Nerdette Recaps.
Throw some stars and write a review if you're feeling generous, like the excellent Eatsy did on iTunes.
Eatsy.
Thank you, Eatsy.
I like it. Eatsy.
Eatsy.
All right, till next week.